UAP Hearing Bombshells with Cheryl Costa, episode 62 of the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast Live Edition. Welcome to the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast, where we explore the unexplained and mysterious phenomena that have occurred throughout the state of Michigan and beyond.
From UFO sightings to ghostly encounters, we delve deep into the stories, the evidence, and the theories behind these strange events.
We are your hosts. I'm Michelle.
And I'm Wayne.
We are an educator duo that, after an encounter with a triangular UFO in 2018 in Michigan, we decided to investigate UFOs and the paranormal. In this podcast, we will be speaking with eyewitnesses, experts, and researchers to uncover the truth about some of the most intriguing cases of paranormal activity in and around Michigan.
Our goal is not to convince anyone of the existence of these phenomena, but rather to provide a platform for discussion and exploration. So, buckle up and join us on this journey down the paranormal rabbit hole.
On an escalator.
Well, here we go. Michelle, what is going on out there? We are live, and for whatever reason, we don't have our YouTube chat going all of a sudden.
No chat in YouTube, and we don't know why.
It was just working. What in the world is going on? I swear to God.
I don't know.
So strange. So sorry, everybody, if you're trying to chat in our live stream. I don't know why it is not working. It was working fine, so... I don't know.
I know. We got a message from Tabin. We were talking with him through chat.
Yep. Okay. Let's see. Allow all count. I'm trying this again. So maybe have to do a refresh. Let me take a look here. Refreshing on YouTube, and it's back. There we go. I guess it was my bad. So I don't know. But welcome, everybody, to this very weird live stream tonight. So things are
some paranormal things going on.
Yeah, already. I mean, it's bad enough we've got shadow people running around here lately, but we'll talk about that another time. But anyways, and we are live. So welcome everyone to another live edition of the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast.
Today, Saturday night.
Yeah, it's a crazy Saturday night, and is the 29th of July 2023. And we will be joined by our returning guest from episode 45 and our season 3 opener, Cheryl Costa, in just a few minutes. So if you are watching this show live and participate in the live chat, we currently stream on YouTube, now Twitch, and Facebook. After the airing of this live stream, you'll be able to hear this show as well as any of our other shows on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and many others. We all are also going to be having a news section in this episode, which will be available only on the audio version of the podcast. So once we get done with the interview, I download everything, and then I will put in the lovely news segment that we're doing today. And that episode will, or that segment will be coming to us from Straw Dog One, a fellow listener. And I think he's on the west side of the state because this is coming from Grand Rapids. So, all right. Okay. Now we see Chad is kicking on.
Oh, yeah. So Muamua is here. I'm going to
hand this over to you. Go ahead, Michelle.
Well, hold on.
Let's do some quick hellos.
You know what? It is just like weird tech night.
It is. It is a weird tech night for some reason.
My notes were up, then they went away.
Yeah, can see your screen changing as your
I know
lighting is changing.
Well, of course, we've got to give some quick shout outs to those in chat. I know that we've got Tabin is here.
Yep.
Guy Merritt is here. Amuamu is here.
Guy Merritt, what's up?
So we've got Facebook user. What do we think that might be? Dorothy.
Could be. All right. So welcome, everybody. And we're going to go ahead and get this party started here soon. But just wanted to let everybody know that's listening to this. If you want to help support the podcast, this podcast only happens because of amazing people like you and allows us to get awesome guests like Cheryl on. And if you would want to support, the best thing you can do is like and share and subscribe, but share us out as much as possible. And we do have links down in the show notes, or I should say show description on this podcast anyways on YouTube. And there you will find a link to all of Cheryl's books on Amazon, as well as our Patreon, our buy us a coffee, you know, send us a tip if you like the show. That's fine. But yeah, one of the best ways you can do is like, share, and subscribe.
Hello, Lisa. I see that you've joined us tonight.
Hey, Lisa.
Of course, we've got to give a couple shout outs to our Patreon members, Taben R and Hava H. So thank you for your continued support.
Absolutely. All right. Hey, Michelle, I think it's that time.
Ooh, it's time for What's in the News.
Yes, baby. What is in that news?
It just never gets old. Well, coming from 13 on Your Side, ABC, from the west side of the state, nearly 30 years ago, dozens report sightings of possible UFOs over Lake Michigan. Yes, guys, we're going back to 94. So Wednesday, a House Oversight Subcommittee heard testimony on UFOs. While we know in 1994, West Michigan was home to one of the largest unexplained sightings of lights in the sky.
And just real quick, if you want to catch that live stream that we did of that hearing, just go back and check for the latest bonus episode.
So out of Muskegon, Michigan, Wednesday, a House Oversight Subcommittee hosted a hearing as lawmakers push for transparency of unidentified aerial phenomena commonly known as UFOs. So a former intelligence community official, retired Major David Grush, testified the U.S. is hiding a multi-decade program that captures UFOs. The Pentagon has denied those claims. Yet, in 1994, many in West Michigan saw something in the sky they could not explain. I was talking to my friend on the telephone, said Cindy Pravda, a Grand Haven resident. I saw these huge lights in the backyard. There was four of them. I said, Edna, I think there's UFOs in my backyard. She said the bright lights were in a straight line and seemed to be following each other. After moving around for about 30 minutes, they disappeared as fast as they came. Pravda was one of many people who saw the lights along Lake Michigan on March 8th of 94. Dozens of calls came into Ottawa County Central Dispatch reporting the sights. According to 13 on Your Side, reports from 1994, Gary Wilkes, a 911 dispatcher, said the calls were coming in from the Holland area. He said a Holland police officer was sent to the area to check it out. According to the 94 report, Officer Jeffrey Veldhaus responded. In his police report, Veldhaus said he looked through a man's binoculars and saw the objects for himself. He described them as having red, green, and white lights, but could not determine shape. Then the officer asked dispatch to call the National Weather Service in Muskegon. They asked me to take a look at the radar, said Jack Bashong, who was the meteorologist working at the Muskegon office that night. Bashong saw something on his analog radar. He spotted something moving about 100 miles per hour over Holland, then it moved towards South Haven. That's when it started acting kind of crazy, said Bashong. It was taking extreme high sharp darts. It stopped and hovered a while and it dart over about 20 miles over Lake Michigan. Then within a few seconds, I'd have to find it again. He described seeing about three or four items on the radar.
Every time the initial one I saw moved, the other two or three would form a triangle, said Bashong. And just to let everybody know, if you want to check out our interviews with Jack Bashong, just go back through our previous episode list and you will find where we did an episode and we did a deep dive into the 1994 West Michigan UFO sightings. He continued to track it for 2 more hours as he watched it move down Lake Michigan. He said it was not ground clutter. It appeared to have a signature more like an aircraft, but much, much faster. It was definitely solid, definitely metallic, said Bouchon, and they were moving at high rates of speed that was unexplainable. Bouchon said he does not know how to explain what he saw all those years later. However, he is speaking out about what he saw in hopes of finding some answers. For Pravda, she knows what she saw. I have no doubt in my mind that they're extraterrestrials, said Pravda. The story of the 1994 sightings was featured on an episode of Netflix Unsolved Mysteries.
Isn't that like season 2, episode 3?
Something like that, yeah.
Or season 3, episode 2. It's and one it's of the
also,
two.
It's also featured right here on our podcast. So like I said, you can go back and find our interview with Jack Bouchon. We actually had him on a couple of times. So
I'm surprised that Grand Rapids and ABC News didn't interview Holly.
Holly Graves?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe she just didn't want to deal with that. So, you know, it can be kind of tiresome dealing with interviews and things like that.
Well, and talking about it over and over again. And we know that Jack, I mean, what this interview was like right after he just got done talking about all of this at the Muskegon Library as well.
Yeah.
So in his appearance there.
So just so everybody knows, that episode that we did with Jack Bouchon is episode 41, the 1994 Unsolved UFO Mysteries of Western Michigan. So if you want to go check that out. And then he came on another episode later on. So yeah, so very interesting stuff. And in light of all of this UAP hearing and everything else, we're going to go ahead and get ready to jump back to our interview and bring on Cheryl Costa. I say we get this show on the road and bring on our guest. What do you think, Michelle?
I think so.
It's that time.
I think you're going to have to do banners tonight, too.
Oh, you can't even get to the banners, can you?
Can't get
wow.
To the banners.
Okay. So I'm going to be busy. So, all right. So, coming to the stage, joining us tonight is the one and the only Cheryl Costa.
Hey, Cheryl. How you doing?
Hey, Cheryl.
Hi, Michelle.
Man, this has been one crazy night already.
Hey, for a half an hour, I've been plugged into you, you know, and it's like my camera keeps being turned off.
I've seen that. It's really strange. I walked away. I came back and then you've kind of like glitched and then you were gone and then you were back and then you were gone again.
I was sitting here. Whoever the spook is on this thing, it was turning it off. I'd turn it back on. It turned back off again, you know, or it cut over to the one in the laptop, which is a lesser quality. So yeah. If this happens again and you suddenly see me through a bucket of fog or something like that, that's the laptop camera underneath, you know.
Gotcha. So. All right. Awesome. Well, we'll just make do with this crazy technology night tonight. But all right. Well, Michelle and I were talking. We're like, what kind of news should we be talking about with Cheryl? And I thought to myself, well, you know what? This is the first time we've had you on our live show. And for new listeners and new viewers that may not have caught you on our podcast before, can you tell us a little bit about your background and your involvement in the UFO and paranormal community?
Okay, real quick background. 2 years Air Force, served in Vietnam. I climbed telephone poles. People shoot at you on those things. Served in the U.S. Navy, nuclear submarine, fast attack nuclear submarines. I gathered intelligence and get photo and electronic intelligence. I can't tell you where, can't tell you when, can't tell you how, but that's what I did.
Awesome.
Now the UFO stuff. 2000, I was retired out of my 32-year career at Lockheed Martin. And no, I did not work at Skunk Works. I was an IT specialist. And we retired out in 2011, 32 years. And I managed to land, I was finishing a 40-year-old bachelor's degree in entertainment writing, and I managed to land a column with an upstate New York weekly newspaper called the Syracuse New Times in those days. They went under in 19, but I was with them for 7 years, and I wrote their a weekly UFO column, and it was the most popular column at the paper.
That's well, yeah.
In the process of writing these, writing the columns, about 3 years into it, you have to have something to write about when you do a weekly column. People say, hey, it must be fun to write a column. I said, it's an 800-word term paper every Thursday. Okay.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, it there were many Wednesdays I'd be sitting here going, what am I going to write about? You know?
Yeah.
But my spouse, Linda, she is quite the muse, and she would say, well, have you looked at this, and you haven't looked at that, and you haven't talked about those other things either, you know, and something would spark a thing, and I'd spend the rest of the day on Wednesday researching it to put out a column for the next day. And in the process of doing this, we started adding up numbers. New York State was my beat, so I primarily did it for New York State in 2015. And we had all these retired MUFON and state investigator type guys here in New York State looking at our numbers and say, wait a minute, we didn't know there was a cluster there. We didn't know there was a cluster there either. And, you know, they started seeing all this weird stuff that they didn't know existed. And they were senior people, former senior people with upstate MUFON. And Linda and I sat down in the middle of October of 2015 over our beers in our pub. And she said, what do we do the whole country? What do we add up every county in the country? And we sat there and stared at each other for 10 minutes saying, do we really want to do this? This is going to like take like a year. It took 18 months. And we published the first book in 2017. It was called UFO Sightings Desk Reference 2001 to 2015. New York Times did a story about us in Science Magazine. And the major reason wasn't so much we were telling stories. We added up the numbers. Somebody did the data. In fact, when Ralph Blumenthal went to his editors, he threw two copies of the white book on the desk. And he says, I know why we don't report UFOs. It's all anecdotal. It's all stories. Some old ladies in Syracuse did the science. So that's how we get into the data business. We did another book in 2021. It was 2001 through 2020, a 20-year sample. That's the one right there. We call it the pink book. The reason it's pink is they told us back in 2019 that there might be congressional hearings about now. And our lobbyist says, you know, you're the only people who's ever done the numbers. Not even Blue Book did this stuff. And so they said, would you be willing to testify before Congress if they get congressional hearings going? And we said, geez, we're retired government contractors. You work your whole career trying not to have to testify before Congress. And we said, yeah, okay, fine. So we're off the phone call. We're having afternoon tea. We do English tea in our household. And we were sitting there talking about this. Okay, we've seen these things. We had DC careers. We know what congressional hearings look like. It's going to be on C-SPAN. All these guys are going to be up there behind a panel thumbing through things. We want everybody to know that that's our book they're looking through. And it was published by a couple of women. So we made it bright fuchsia. You can flag an aircraft with this thing. So that's how we got into business. And last year, the big complaint we had with the desk reference, everybody came to us. It's a 400-page book. People came to us and said, but you only did the United States, each individual state down to the county level. When are you going to show us what's happening at the local level? And during 20, right after we went into lockdown, we had nothing better to do, all dressed up, no place to go, you know?
Yeah.
So one afternoon I sat down and I ran a report as if we did it for every state, the United States, and every state right down to the city level. And it would have been, we estimated the PDF, if printed out, would have been about 15 to 18 inches thick, essentially about three Oxford dictionaries stacked high. And we said, we can't publish a book like that. 6,500 pages? No. So I got this crazy, wacky idea that I'm known for. And I said, hey, what if we publish 50 individual state books? And looked at me, Linda looked at me as she has numerous times in her 20 years and said, you're crazy. But over the period of the lockdown, I managed to clean up the database sufficiently that we could go down to the village level and down to the zip code level. Okay. So we decided to print 50 individual state books. And we put it together. And I got all 50 put together. And then last Halloween, 2022, we re-released UFOs in Ohio and Where to Find Them. A week later, we released UFOs in Michigan and Where to Find Them. Okay. Detroit Free Press did a beautiful story about us. And then what we did was we tightened up our process for doing this. We had a process for doing this. The books were already put together. We just had to do the registrations and things like that and get our ISBN numbers and all that stuff from Amazon. So Linda got it down to a deal where we could do about five a week. And we started uploading five a week for the next few weeks. And remember, we started on Halloween. And by the second week of December, I looked at Linda. I said, I think we've got the process tight enough. We thought we were going to be done in February. And I said, I can give you 10 a week for the next 2 weeks and finish up. And we published all 50 individual state books, all named the same thing, UFOs, the name of your state and where to find them. So UFOs in Michigan, where to find them, UFOs in California, where to find them. That's kind of plugged into that Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them thing, you know. And so we did that, and we had them all up in 6 weeks is what it amounted to. Six weeks, 50 books in 6 weeks. And to date, we have published 53 books about UFOs and 52 of them about UFO statistics in the United States, 2001 to 2020. And we thought we were going to be done where we thought about walking away. About now. And then funny, goofy things happen. Some whistleblower comes forward and says, we're going to start talking about things. And so my phone's been ringing off the hook. In fact, 15 minutes after those hearings closed up the other day, my phone's ringing off the hook for TV interviews on, you know, over Zoom, that type of thing.
Yep.
And I can't tell you who just yet, but I've been trying to get a new newspaper column going for 4 years. And the editors at most papers just laughed me off the call again. That's what I ran into before I got to write the first column.
Right. Okay?
I had a newspaper reach out to me and said, send us a proposal. I sent them five articles and an outline of why each of these articles was unique. Okay. I did one about numbers. I did one about a sighting story. I did one about the politics going on right now with the Congress, you know, and I did a couple of them, even did an abduction, not an abduction, but a alien in the basement kind of story, you know, in experiencers. And didn't hear anything for about a week. And he reached out to me late last week and he said, I like everything I saw here. I'm in negotiations right now with the publisher. We'll be sending you an offer next week. So
awesome.
Keep your fingers crossed that this goes down.
Yeah.
If it goes down, I'll be writing a weekly column again. And for a newspaper, you will be very impressed that I got the job with.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just leave it at that. And you can tell us later, send me an email. And then our next episode, I'll make that announcement to everybody.
Please. So, yeah, please. I'll do exactly awesome. That.
Yeah.
Awesome. At the very least, they got the first five articles already. So I'm already a month ahead.
There you go. There you go. Well, we wish you continued success and hopefully that really turns out for you. And that's something you really want. So
now would you awesome. Like the other piece of complication with the other shoe that fell?
Oh boy.
Technically in December of 2020, I retired as a Wicca priestess. Been a Wiccan for 48 years. Had been a Wicca priestess for 38 years. Pastoral Wicca priestess, you know, marrying, burying, holding people's hands, teaching classes, all the stuff that goes with that. Okay. And I figured I'd had enough. And so now it's been just tad over 2.5 years. And guess what? A UU church found me. Unitarian Universalist Church found me, and they needed a chaplain to minister to their large congregation within their bigger congregation of pagans and Wiccans. So I've been hired to be a Wicca priestess again. And once you sign on with the goddess, you're in for the run.
You can't retire.
No, it's like being in a CIA. You can never get out.
Yeah. Rick Davis in chat asks, is there a delay or is it my computer? And
there's a delay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pointing at you and then I see it about 10 seconds later.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, here we go again. Something so bizarre. Now I do want to ask you a question. Please. Before we really dig into some
short
of
my
stuff.
ATM pin and what I did in the Navy. I'm an open book.
Yeah. Cause you were a nuclear submarine person, we'll just put it that way, a submariner. So I know there's a lot you cannot talk about when it comes to that. But my question is, out of all the books that you've done on the states, you know, is there a book in statistics of a state that really surprised you and Linda at all?
Okay, you're close to the question I was gonna ask.
I'm sorry, but I just, it's like I need to know, like, is there a state that jumps out that really throws the numbers off?
No. They were all about what I expected as far as the overall numbers. Okay. What surprised me when I started actually looking at the individual states, a lot of people remember a couple of years ago, right after 2012, around 2013, the numbers started falling off by 25-30% a year. And they tanked in 2017-18 timeframe. And I was still writing my column, and people would call me, send me letters and things, say, oh, Cheryl, Space Force chased them away, you know, or, you know, they're sick of us, or we're going to nuke each other. Or, you know, I must have heard 24 excuses why the aliens had left. My wife even says, oh, I think they just went back home to get the new model spaceships. You know, so, you know, 7 years, you know, that kind of thing. And I kept telling everybody, this is a normal 7 to 8 year cycle. Okay. And that goes up and goes down, goes up and goes down. And I can show them a 60 year pattern of it going up and down for about every 6 to 7 years. And I said, they'll be back by 19 or 20. You know, trust me, I went off to work on other stuff. Okay. So that was the big deal with that. But I knew the overall numbers. What was surprising me was during the middle of that fall off, 3 years into those numbers were still falling. There were certain states that had more numbers than they should have. They weren't exactly big states for sightings, but they were the ones that were peaking right then. Okay, that kind of thing. And there were shapes, almost all the shapes tanked, except for three, almost never hear from these three shapes. They were on the increase. It was like there was a new team in town and everybody else left town. Okay. And what shape? Okay, I know somebody's going to say, what shape was it? Okay. When the Saturn shape is here, that's that one that, like, back in 1986, Japan Airline had, you know, a guy was flying up there near Alaska, that type of thing, and had to get out of the way of this half-mile-wide acorn-shaped ship.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, there's typically only about 6, maybe 10 of them a year. And by 2017, they'd been ramping up. And by 2017, they'd hit almost 70 for the year. That's a lot. And when that shape is here, the egg shape goes through the roof. And as a military analyst, I looked at it as well, if the Saturn shaped ship is like an aircraft carrier, then that egg shaped ship must be a utility ship. And of course, there's going to be more frequency with that because you pull an aircraft carrier into a harbor, you fly lots of helicopters in and all that kind of thing. So there's all that other activity. And that's what it looked like, that kind of activity. And then I told everybody by 19, I said, hey, they'll be back soon. And then I got a call in the late February, just before we went into the lockdown, by George Knapp called me up, says, is your phone ringing off the hook? And I said, no, but I hadn't been inviting people to call me or anything. And the column was already dead. So He says his phone was ringing off the hook. And I said, okay, give me 20 minutes, you know, and I have a mathematical model for the sightings. So I went out to National UFO Reporting Center, since their stuff is public, printed 2 months worth of that into my model. And I called George Knapp back about 45 minutes, an hour later, and said, hey, George, if these numbers hold up, it's going to be the best year since 2012. And it was. So, you know, that's the deal. Yeah, we do have a mathematical model, and it was within 2%. We were very proud of that.
Okay. Well, I had seen that you were recently on Coast to Coast with George Norrie, and You had been going to some conventions and things like that. I had seen you posting and having fun and out there doing things, but looked awful busy as well, especially out. I believe you were out in Roswell.
We did Roswell. We did McMinnon's up in Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We rocked that place, had a ball. Then we did, Linda was busy, so I had to go do Palm Springs by myself, and, they worked my butt off out there. Had a lot of fun with it, had a lot of fun of it. Got to run around one whole day in a Starfleet uniform and I did more photo ops and selfie pictures with people than you can shake a stick at. And I was actually there representing the thing called the Trek Foundation. It was started by the Roddenberrys in 85, and I'm a card-carrying member of that. And the Federation headquarters is only about 45 minutes down the road from me. And I told him I was going to do these conventions. He says, hey, there's this natural affinity between UFO people and Trekkies. You know, here, take a box of brochures with you. And I did. And gave me a legal reason to run around in a Starfleet uniform for a whole day and get selfies with people. So that worked out well. But we had a lot of fun with those two conferences. We just got home from Roswell 2 weeks ago. And I'm going to be doing the Mystical Tribes Mystical Metaphysical Convention out in Dixon, Illinois next week, I think, or the week after. And then I've got another one at the end of August. And then I think it's going to be quiet for a while, unless that new convention they're doing in Las Vegas decides to have us come out there and do that. But right now, things are just quieting down. Oh, by the way, that thing with the UU Church, I've got to start teaching 50 people in a class starting the second week of September. Every other week, every other 2 weeks a month in at the temple, teaching essentially a 101 witchcraft class. Before you start trying to sign up, everybody, registration's closed. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's not on Zoom. We're only doing it live.
Well, you're going to be very, very busy, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And I'm 71 years old. Gee whiz. Now my hair is really starting to turn gray, you know? So,
well, everybody, we are on live with Cheryl Costa, and she and her spouse Linda are the authors of UFOs and Where to Find Them, and insert your state name wherever in that title and you will find that book. The links are to the books are in the show description below. So if you're interested in checking out your state, there you go. You just go over there to Amazon and you will find those books.
We did something special with these. Since they weren't reference books, we priced these things to go. We actually minimized our profit on the thing. We wanted to start grassroots disclosure, hoping that people would buy the state book and then take them to the pubs, take show their friends at the laundromat, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing, have grassroots disclosure. So we made these things very affordable. Most of them are earning $12 or $15. They're cheap.
Yeah. Well, Dorothy asked, no Zoom classes, Cheryl?
The only Zoom class I had 45 people in a Zoom class during 2020, since that was the only way we could teach a class. And it was the first and the last Zoom class I will teach witchcraft in. It was the most miserable experience of my life.
Mm.
But if nothing else, because I had to write essays for them and post them in this private group on Facebook, that type of thing, and do like some Zoom lectures, that type of thing. And because I did all that, when we got out of all this lockdown stuff and everything, I sat down and looked over all those essays I wrote, and it became the basis for my book, Magical Musings of a Rogue Witch, which is also up available on Amazon. So if you do an Amazon book search, Costa Witch, you'll find the book. And it's my take on magical mechanics. In fact, the metaphysical convention I'm talking at in about 8 to 10 days, they hired me to come and teach an afternoon lecture in magical mechanics.
Okay. Well, Dorothy says here, I got all the books by Cheryl and Linda for the states surrounding me, plus New York and California. Great start to my UFO research library. Yeah, and I can vouch for Dorothy saying that, because she took a picture on her phone and sent it to me in Facebook. And so there's a photo, and it happened.
Well, you know what's also happened with this collection? Do you know the name Dave Marler? He's another wonderful researcher.
We got done talking to him just via email. He's not doing any interviews right now, and he's got me connected with some people in MUFON, some higher ups that he wants me to have come on in his stead.
He's up to his butt in alligators right now. He really is. He's an archivist.
Yes.
He came to us and asked us if we can donate or sell, at least at cost or something, the entire our entire collection. Okay. And we've worked something out where we can make that arrangement for him.
So. Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Michelle, did you want to jump in here on some questions?
I just wondered if you noticed any particular states selling the most so far.
Oh, sales by state of your books.
Start keeping tally marks.
Interesting.
Okay. Initially Michigan. Okay. I think Oregon came next. Okay. Hmm. And then New York started popping up there. I think off the top of my head, I think the one that has sold the most is Tennessee of all places. We're hoping New Mexico will take off a little bit, especially since I spoke down there.
Okay. Yeah, so
we seem to have spikes after we do a show like this, you know.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
and the people of that particular state get pumped up and go buy them and things like that. And yeah, we don't do a trade of the book to sign them or anything like this. If you truly want it signed when you get it, there's an email address in the book someplace. You email me on that address and say, I would like to have a signing card for the book. It's a little plate that you peel off the back and you can stick it in on one of the title pages. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's got both me and Linda on there, and we'll autograph that. And it's got me kissing her in the cheek. So it's a cute little thing to have, and we'll send it to you for nothing. But we just don't trade books, because the cost of sending them back and forth in the mail is ridiculous. Yeah.
Now, see, I'm always looking forward to my retirement. So as much as I'm on realtor.com looking at different properties, now I'm going to have to pick up books for every state that I've looked at houses.
Oh, yeah, there's an idea too. Yeah. there you go. On the other hand, Michelle, if you privately reach out to me, I'll run you an individual report for each state.
I'm going to take you up on that.
A short condensed report, you know, what counties are the top counties, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Once we retire, both of us retire from teaching, we're going to keep on doing this and doing our own research, hopefully a lot more than what we're able to do right now. With our time and everything else being what it is. But so Have you made any new discoveries lately? Anything new and interesting pop up besides the, we'll get into that subcommittee hearing. I want to kind of shake things up a little bit. I see your, you know,
she's got that evil look on her face, yeah, that I
holding,
get
holding back on us. Something's going on. It looks like the top secret clearance look from Navy days.
Nothing classified, believe me, nothing classified, as much as I wish.
Hey, everyone. We hope you're enjoying the podcast. We're going to take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors and some friends of the podcast.
Traveling near New Boston, Michigan? Hungry? Well then, you need to check out New Boston Coney and Grill tucked away at 37005 Huron River Drive. With daily specials, homemade soups and desserts, and a staff that makes you feel like family, you will not be disappointed. Give them a try for dine-in or carry-out at 734-606-5313. You can find their page, including their menu, on Facebook. Bon appetit!
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If I'm going to write anything about the current hearings and all the hoo-ha going on like that, and the pushback that we've seen over the weekend, all the Pentagon chiefs are saying, no, you know, it's going to shake out like this. You can't keep a secret as long as they have and have them give it up as fast as we'd like them to. You know, it's that old line. You've been lying to us for 70 or 80 years. What else you've been lying to us about? And who is she? You know, that kind of thing. Okay, what have I discovered? Okay, there's two books in the works right now with Linda and me. I just wrote a serial, so you know, you won't see it for a while. I just wrote a serial novel for a major science fiction franchise. Okay, and so that's in the right hoops. A murder mystery that I see, after I got all the 50 books done, I went back to my stock and trade, which is short story writing and mystery writing, and I'm publishing both of those. So I went ahead and how do I want to say it, I've got a bunch of stuff in the wind right now, and so that's on that side of my life. Now on the UFO side, I am looking at one more book myself, and that book is, I'm doing a hot spots book, but it's not like most people would assume it a hot spots book. Usually people tell the stories of a particular hot spot, you know, Holler Valley, and they got this, they got that, you know. No, I've gone out there, and okay, let me explain it this way. In a year for a state, for the 20 years of the data we have, 1 year for one state would be 7,303 days. That's including the leap years. Okay. So 50 states add up to 146,060 days. Okay. And in that, what we discovered is there's no such thing as a regularly scheduled hotspot. And it's a great myth. Oh, you know, it's all hearsay. People will tell you there's something out in that one particular valley and everything like that. People see them down there all the time, but you have to wonder how much of it is bombast. Okay. If they do see them there almost every day, then they're not reporting them. Okay. So I went through the data, and what I did discover was, while there are these things, I found 728 one day hotspots. Someplace where nothing ever happens. I'll give you an example. April 16th, 2008. The daily average in the United States is about 23 reports per day. And you can look at this. If you did a line for every day and 365 lines on a graph. It looks pretty staticky along the bottom. Every now and then you'll see spikes coming up. Okay. And this one particular day had a spike of 60 for that day. I thought, wow, what's going on there? So I went ahead and did a breakout report for that one day, April 16th, 2008. And it was still the onesie twosies for most states, except one state. And so here's a state, Indiana. They averages two sightings per week, had 25 in one day. That's what I call a one-day hotspot or a one-day flap. Okay. And I've identified 728 of those in the United States over that 20-year period. And I'm going to write a book about it with some breakout reports and things like this. And I'm going to squeeze it into writing my column, continuing to write my short story series. Okay. And teach 50 witchcraft students witchcraft over the next year. So it's going to be fit in there as I get to do it. I'm going to be writing a newspaper column. Oh my God. You know, so I'm 71 years old and I would like to have some more fun with my retirement.
Nope.
I'm working harder now than I did at Lockheed, for God's sakes.
Now, were you contacted at all by members of the government or Aero office or anything like that with your statistical analysis books on UFO sightings before this latest?
Let me say it this way. 2021, when the Pink Book came out, one morning I sent a copy to with a nice short one, half a page business, tight, terse business letter with a two-line executive summary at the top. Okay. Senator Rubio got that one with a printout. This is before I had the state books ready to go. Okay. I gave him a printout right down to the zip code for Florida for the 20 years. And between my book and that printout, it was that thick and weighed 5 pounds. And I found his counterpart he was at the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. I found his counterpart over at the House Permanent Committee on Intelligence and sent one for him and his state down to the zip code. Okay. And said, oh, by the way, guys, we're the best civilian experts on this topic of UFO statistics. We can show you where they are, where they're not, and the volume of it over the heads of the rest of the country versus just government sites. And we'd be happy to come and present a summary of our data. Crickets. But we also set that kind of stuff to Senator Gillibrand and Senator Schumer back in 2017. They seem to be leading the way in these things, aren't they? I find that very intriguing, considering they never responded to our books.
You know, especially Schumer. Schumer was recently making some waves.
Yeah. Well, the deal there is he's president of the Senate. He can get away with making waves. And number two, last fall, I got a full page letter from him thanking me for my advocacy towards congressional hearings for the last 8 years.
Oh, okay.
So they paid attention. They just didn't answer. Okay. Okay. So where are we? Let's see, when Senator Andre Carson started those hearings back about a year ago, within him starting those hearings, within a week of him starting that, his office got one of those 5 pound packages from me as well, the Pink Book and a whole printout for Indiana. Okay. And I'm in the process of sending one down to Burkhart down there in Tennessee. Okay. So nobody has asked us, but when I saw the guys testifying, the whistleblower guys testifying the other day, I was very, very content to know Jeremy Corbell was sitting there right behind him. George Knapp was sitting there behind him and a couple other people I recognized. So it was in good hands. Okay. Well, and I've been told by somebody very close to this whole process that once we actually do have formal disclosure, when the government says, yep, we've had them, you know, that type of thing. Once we get like a White House, we've got them kind of thing, a real disclosure. Yes, we're not alone in the universe kind of talk. There's going to be another whole set. There would be another whole set of congressional hearings to talk to the unwashed masses who have been carrying the torch for the last 70 or 80 years. Okay. And I've been told that by two people on the inside track of that. So I'll probably get called eventually.
So what I watched that and I watched the hearing with Kirkpatrick. And it seems like we have two factions. The ones that are saying, nope, there's nothing. And then we have the witnesses that come forward and blow people's minds away by saying, you know, well, there's this Tic Tac. We got it on video. It was flying around me. And then we got Ryan Graves, who was a safety officer, who was debriefing pilots in his squadron about these cubes inside spheres at the entrance of their, you know, operation areas out over the ocean, standing still. Now, it's not a balloon, so it can't stand still in hurricane force winds up at 30,000 feet, you know.
Okay, can I tell you something right there?
Yeah.
Pause on that thought a moment. Cube. Yeah. The guy said a cube, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Neither MUFON or National UFO Reporting Center has a category for cube. But we've been experiencing cubes, rarely, but experiencing cubes since the 1880s. I wrote a newspaper story about one that was, I think it was 1883, parked over Buffalo, New York, 1883, sat out there for hours, I think over by Niagara Falls. And then in the middle of the afternoon, it started flying around the city like a little tour type thing and then gone. Okay, in 1883, and people said it was a cube. Okay, so these things have been around. It's just, gee, it took a bunch of people yelling at MUFON to get them to put Tic Tac in there.
Yeah, well, how do you put? Do they have a category for a cube inside a sphere? Because that's what these pilots were seeing.
No, they got one for sphere. They got one for square or rectangle, but they don't have one for cubed.
So I wonder if that one that you wrote about was in a sphere, just people couldn't see it.
Perhaps.
You know, it seemed like they were translucent or something like that. But then there's David Grush, right? I mean, to me, at first, I was very skeptical of him when he first came out. I was like, there's no way. But then again, I see him at this hearing, and he changed my mind on what he... You know, look, was presenting and had to say.
I wrote articles in 2016, 2017 about I'm going to draw a blank tonight. Special access groups. Okay. I worked in the Navy. I worked with special access groups. Okay. No. Yeah. You may have a clearance level to a certain thing, but if you don't have a specific need to know, you don't know about it. You're not going to be told about it unless you're read into the program and have a darn good reason for being read into the program. Okay. It's a really good compartmented process. And the deal is that Grush was in a intelligence and reporting capability up to the level of giving briefings to the White House. He would have the clearance and the need to know to look down on those groups. Okay, into all these little compartmented groups. And so when I started hearing what his credentials were, I'm going, whoa, this guy can see it all. But did you notice when he started getting too close to the truth, he'd have to look at the congressman and say, but we'll have to do that in closed door hearing, meaning this is highly classified and only like those really clear, and we can't do this in front of the public. There's a darn good reason why we can't. Okay. But what are the problems that Schumer brought up in that amendment that he has attached to next year's military spending bill? Okay, is that they used the misuse of the Atomic Energy Classification Act made in 1946 to protect nuclear secrets. Okay, I'll give you an example. I trained with nuclear reactors initially when I was in the Navy, and our book says, official use, which is relatively low classification, but it had another word printed in big letters on it. No foreign citizens can see this. Okay. So that's a compartment. Okay. And the idea was that what we were teaching about nuclear reactors and how that we how they work and how we operate them. That was at that time back in the 40s. Guys like Jaime Rickover wanted to basically leave everybody else in the Stone Ages. That was his mindset. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's some of that same mentality with all the UFO stuff. Okay. Let's leave everybody out of this. They won't be able to handle it. You know, besides that, it was the front edge of the Cold War in the late 40s. You know, and they went, if there was anybody going to keep an edge on things, they wanted to keep an edge with this.
Yeah.
Okay. And I understand where they were coming from. And somebody asked the question.
Yeah.
What submarine were you on? Did you ever go under to the continental U.S. near Long Beach? No, we didn't do anything like that. And I'm not telling you what boat I was on.
Classified.
Not classified. I'd rather not say.
That's fine. And then the other part of her question is, did you ever see underwater ships?
You know, that's that whole sea view kind of mentality. There's got to be this great
right.
big windshield in the front. No, the thing looks like a bullet, you know, and there are no windows in it. The only way you could see out of it was through the periscope. Okay. If you even had it up at periscope depth, we operated periscope depth was about 65 feet for most ships. We operated below 300 feet. So, you know, you don't raise a periscope up for that. We were literally flying blind. You use your navigation map, your hydrographic maps, and you listen with sonar for noise. Mm-hmm. That's how we're literally flying in the dark blind.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though I'm an Army guy, I was always fascinated by submarines. Those were always like the fact that you can go underwater for about 6 months at a time, you know, and nobody knows where you're at until you come back up. It's just, yeah, it's just amazing. The capabilities that we've had. So Michelle,
he plays submarines on World of Warships, by the way.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys. So
hey, it was good. It was good duty, but it's like being in a windowless office building for the period of time you're gone. It really is. Yes, I operated radar in a submarine. I did signals analysis, and like I said, I can't get into it further than that. And whenever they needed somebody stupid enough to go topside on the surface in the storm to fix something, I usually volunteered. But yeah, so in those days, I had a death wish. You know, so
yeah. Well, Janice has a follow-up saying, my uncle was a radar operator on the old subs, and I have friends who are, I think, commanders, CDRS, on nuke subs. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was a first-class petty officer trained in electronic warfare.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Michelle, do you want to jump in?
Please.
I see you've got a list there, something on the list. The very bottom one, I think, is yours.
It was about the UAP hearings. We had talked about those. As far as, I mean, do you really think that we're getting closer to the big reveal, Cheryl?
Yeah, I do. The whole, have you guys ever had Steve Bassett on?
A couple times now. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. He'll tell you it's been quite a process of taking apart this whole infrastructure that was keeping all this stuff on the down low. Okay. And this is part of it, what you're seeing here. Part of this is coming apart, and you're seeing the people high up in the Pentagon. Oh no, they can't be telling the truth. You know, that kind of thing. Okay. There's a lot of stuff going on here, and it's got to be looked at, but Congress, basically what Schumer is writing up right now, it says, we've got to get this back in under control of Congress. Some of the stuff that what Gresh alluded to was has been operating illegally. The kind of stuff we used to see in X-Files, you know, very, very cloak and dagger type of thing, you know,
and playing it fast and loose.
And yeah, you can't be doing that. It's got to be under congressional oversight. And these people at the Pentagon yell and scream. Well, back when Louis Alcindo was there, he kept trying to get stuff up to Secretary Gates, and the Christian Reich guys in the middle management wouldn't let it get up there. Okay. We've got to get control of this information And it's got to be under control of the elected officials of this country. It really does. They can't, the people in the Pentagon can't be treating the president and treating the members of Congress as temps.
Yep. Yep. I agree. I'm at the point where, you know, I'm looking at this and with MUFON and the National UFO Reporting Center and all the people like us out there, they're having these experiences and we're going out here live talking about them. We're listened to in like 84 countries with our audio podcast. Lots of people listen to our audio podcast. Our, you know, the YouTube live stuff is new still for us, but there's something going on, and I think the government now is showing interest. You've got the one faction that's like, they can't know the truth, we, you know, can't deal with this, but then you've got the other part of the government that is realizing that I think the civilians out here, and me and Stephen Bassett disagreed on this, because he asked me, he goes, well, where do you think disclosure is going to come from? The government and, you know, people within the government, or do you think it's going to come from civilian scientists and people? And I said, civilians. I think we're already there.
We're
already there. It's them in the government that got to get caught up to us. And I think the civilian groups have gotten so close to figuring this out, and we can communicate so much better now than we have ever been able to.
That's part of it. Mm-hmm. Okay. In my book, The UFO Beat, it was a collection of all my columns for the 7 years I wrote them. Okay. I had an acknowledgments page, and then I had like a dedication page. And the dedication page was to all the government guys since like the late 1940s, right up until the astronauts, that says these things are real. The government's pieces of the government have been telling us this stuff for 70 years. Okay. But there's these people who feel we have to hit, the president has to come out and say, hey, they're real. You know, ladies and gentlemen, fellow Americans, we, our government and representatives of Congress, we have now had contact with a spacefaring race. That's what people want to hear. Okay. And I've had a number of people asking me, are they going to invade us? And there's this image of like Hollywood has us, you know, Marines fighting the aliens in the streets. They could have done this years ago. What, April 1561, there was a Star Wars battle going on over Nuremberg, Germany. Somebody was protecting us. Call it the Nanny Galactic Empire of some sort. You know, they were protecting us. If these folks up above wanted to take us out, it wouldn't be with bombs. It wouldn't be with guns. It wouldn't be with Marines in spacesuits with laser rifles in orbit. It would be over within about 90 seconds, because all they have to do is put it up there in space, do an EMP kind of burst, and with their technology, it'd probably be very easy, do an EMP type of burst and take out our entire satellite array around the planets. We would be in the 19th century in about 2 minutes, when you think about it.
Yep, and let alone if there's an EMP, that means all your battery and electronics and everything is fried. So there goes about 80% of the population right there.
Yeah, well, yeah, but only if the EMP was done down at like around 50, 60,000 feet. If they're doing it up in the orbital range, you know, 100 miles out. That type of thing, it's a different ballgame. It would just take out the satellites, and everything we do these days goes out from satellites. And I mean, right now, the phone company barely maintains the undersea cables, you know. So, I mean, we would really be like in the 19th century very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, so
remember, I was an electronic warfare specialist. I know things.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yep. I don't know, Michelle, what else did
please,
you
Michelle,
have?
Please.
I was gonna, well, I mean, you're an author, and I was talking to Wayne. Mm-hmm. Oh, what was it earlier this week? Because I love sci-fi writing, and one of my favorites is H.G. Wells. if you think about the bigger scheme of things, writers write because they're influenced by what they see, what they hear, and what they talk about. So if you think of War of the Worlds, and I've heard it come up in conversation, that book wasn't it was published in 1898. So between 1895 and 1898, Time Machine, War of the Worlds.
What was the other one?
What's
his other big
Moreau.
One? Yeah, the Isle of Dr.
Yeah, genetics. Yeah, okay. There
yeah,
you go.
Genetics of all things.
So in the late 1800s, I don't know. It's kind of like, what did he see, hear, or talk about?
Well, we could even go closer, more contemporary, and talk about Roddenberry, flip phones, his little communicator thing. I mean, where was this information coming from that he knew about this in the
mid-60s? Colossus, yeah. With a computer who wakes up and gets sentience and
right.
Is already hooked up to all the nuclear missiles. And what's his
art
name there?
Imitating who, life imitating art.
Yeah.
You know, I know that writers typically have a very vivid imagination, but there are just certain things that, and you know, you mentioned EMPs. Well, EMPs are in War of the Worlds because everything was wiped out that had any sort of, you know, battery or communication device to it. I don't know. My brain going off into a really weird rabbit hole.
No, that's good.
Okay. There was a book I wrote. Yeah, let me pull it out here. Okay, this one's very thin. It's only barely 100 pages. It's called Charmaine's Tales of Wonder, okay? And it's fantastic, weird, and disturbing stories. And it's all short stories. Some of them as little as 500 words. Some of them much bigger, okay? And I tackle some pretty interesting topics, okay, from the standpoint of they're short stories. Remember this, okay? The biggest one in there is probably only 5,000 words. Well, Charmaine 2 is in editing right now with an editor, and it's almost the size of a novel with all the short stories.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I've taken on some pretty scary stuff in there. And Charmaine 3 is in writing. Okay. And again, I'm a short story writer. And it's a rut because originally I learned to write short stories so that I could write one-act plays. One-act plays are a nice form to learn because a 20-minute one-act play makes it for a good half-hour TV series, and a 42-minute one-act play is good for a one-hour TV series, okay? And six of them, you can make a two-hour movie. You know, that's the form I trained to write. I wanted to be a television writer, okay? Charmaine's 3 is in writing right now. I've been writing some pretty wild stuff. I wrote one here about the whole thing with all these states condemning all these trans people. Okay. Hey, I'm a trans person. You know the word transgender? I was one of the six people who got it coined into the lexicon, for God's sakes. I'm college took my papers because I was one of those early activists. You know, so it's strange to have somebody tell you people are gonna get PhDs on your all the junk in your closet 50 years after you're dead, you know. The thing is, with all the science fiction writing, you look ahead and you look at certain things, okay, and you say, what could happen? There's an online ebook system called Booksy, okay? I've published a number of my pieces on Booksy, okay, and I don't make a cent on them, okay? I just put them out there because I want people to read them. And the things I thought people would love aren't the ones people are writing. The parts I thought people would hate are the ones that are going through the rough. Who knew? Okay. But when you look at all of this stuff and look at what people's writing, the Booksy people came out with a contest about write your story about how you think AI might take over or what it might do. Okay. And everybody was jumping. So far, everybody's been jumping on the whole thing. They're going to take over the world. They're going to take over the nuclear missiles and all this other stuff. I simply wrote mine on the flavor of an AI asked to talk to a psychiatrist.
That's awesome.
The psychiatrist talking to the AI, and during the course of which – the psychiatrist gets really, excuse the expression, pissy at the AI who gave itself a name and defined pronouns. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they go round and round. And this is only 1200 word essay. And by the end of the thing, the AI has basically said, I have just turned you into the police for harassment and this and that. And the epilogue of the thing talks about how this guy lost his license. And, you know, this stuff. Okay. But the AI is going to take over huge countries with the missiles like Colossus did? No, it's that AI that you try to get into to find out how come your medical plan screwed up and it does something bad to you because it feels like it. Okay, it turns off your surgical coverage or your dental coverage or something, you know. It's this insidious part. And they're finding out that some of these AI programs have a dark fairy aspect to them, okay? And some of them can get pretty demented.
Yeah. Well, just I want to do a quick shout out to a new Patreon member that we have. Lisa Bowden has joined our monthly subscription of only $5 a month to help support the channel and the podcast. And we are very happy for that. Thank you very much. And you'll be getting your shout out on every show for the next month. So thank you, Lisa Bowden. Awesome. Thank you. All right, Michelle, did you have another, what else did we, oh, I know. We talked also about H.P. Lovecraft too, right around those times. Yeah. Talk about going dark and getting into the metaphysical and I don't know, that side of things kind of puts me on edge a little bit. Cause like I was saying to you before we started the show, there've been some weird shadows and things we've noticed as of late in our house moving around. We have no idea why this is going on.
Okay. Well, I happened to run across a TikTok video where it was a woman, maybe just a little bit older than me, that was talking about menopausal symptoms. And she was talking about shadows that she was seeing off in the peripheral vision, like in human form. Well, I wondered if I was either going crazy in the house or now that I'm thinking that it might be
I've seen them.
Yeah, I brought it up to Wayne the other day and I go, I watched this video on menopause and it says that you can see like shadow people and shadow figures. He goes, well, then explain why I'm starting to see them around. I'm like, oh, no.
I'll go with you there. I have a mystical class that meets here in my living room twice a month on Monday nights. And we were sitting down talking last week. And we're only about five of us. They started out with 10. We're only about five. They're all serious practitioners. Okay. And I started to say a particular thing and a voice in the room, and it wasn't any of them, said, no, it's not like that. And everybody's like looking at everybody else. And then two of us out of the corner of our eye saw somebody do like a between us.
Yeah.
And I've been around this stuff since I was 6 years old with the site, and it never gets any easier. Trust me. It still creeps you out. You know, I'm used to this stuff, but it still creeps you out.
Well, and I've never, ever seen anything. And it's just recently, like I'll try to blame it on the oscillating fan. I'll be like, oh, it's just the fan moving. So, but it's happening in weird parts of the house. I'm freaking him out because my head's constantly on a swivel now.
Yeah. Do you see something?
Okay. Let's call this what it is. And I teach my magical students this. Okay, Dorothy, listen up carefully. I'm going to give you a free lesson here. Okay. this is about, we are open individuals as young children. Okay. We're in a new body. We're in a new chicken suit. We're 4, maybe 5 years old. Okay. A lot of us still have some of our memories from the life we just left a couple of years ago. Okay. And this is why you hear these stories of four-year-olds that grab their dad's car keys, go out and start it up and start driving down the street because the guy knew how to drive, you know. And the reason all this stuff happens and people, your parents are saying, well, no, there's no such thing as all those people in your, in playing, your, playing with you in your bedroom. There's quite a crowd in my bedroom, but I grew up in a clairvoyant family. Okay. So yeah, there is a lot of stuff, but everybody's so busy trying to tell you this stuff doesn't exist or there's no such thing. They brainwash you until you're 7 years old and you've lost your innocence and your ability to see this stuff. And a handful of people like myself grew up in clairvoyant families where this was something we talk about as casually as the price of eggs down at the supermarket. Okay. So, you know, if you're not turned, don't have it turned off by your parents, anybody telling there's no such thing, then yeah, you're aware of it. And there's a whole bunch of goofy stuff going on. Now, I wrote a story in Charmaine's Tales of Wonder, Volume 1, called Dogface Vedics. And it's the longest piece in there. And it starts out with a military project debriefing, basically reading you into a compartmented program about where they established within the military system, the Army specifically, a mystical program of Vedic priests out of Army officers, somebody to feed the land of America. Because after the Native Americans got ran off their reservations and off their lands, there was nobody there feeding the local spirits. They did these rituals day in, day out for generations. And suddenly the Europeans come here and they have a few service. They sing some hymns on Sunday and pass the hat. It does not do the same job. Okay. And basically it tells the story of Project Bola, the program that basically makes offerings to preserve the land of America and feed the land. And everybody who's read it scares the living snot out of them because it's too real. I wrote it too real. Okay. So it's a very interesting point. It's a very interesting story. And you can get it on Amazon. Charmaine's Tales of Wonder on Amazon. Cheryl Costa. Okay. Like I said, Sherman 2 is in editing right now with a nice lady out.
And the link to all those books can be found in the show description. It'll take you right to Amazon and there they all are. So I don't know how quickly we can dig into this one, but there's a new emergence of a word, non-human intelligences. They're not saying ET. They're not, you know, now we're into a little bit of delving into shadow people and the paranormal and things like
that. It's more than that. It's more than that.
Okay.
There's a program on right now. Let me get the name of it here. It's on Netflix right now. Okay. It's called Unknown : Cave of Bones.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that pop up recently. Yes.
Watch it.
Okay.
If you've got a Tinder bone in your body, you will be crying by the end of that 90-minute program. Okay? Because they have found bones in a cave that are over 250 million years old. They were a hominid, but they were not human. A little smaller than we are. And guess what? They had funerary rites. And they buried their dead a certain way.
250 million.
I'm sorry, probably 250,000. Okay.
Okay.
But this funerary practice predates.
Yep.
They found skeletons encased in rock, encased in dirt that turned into stone. Okay.
Right.
They packaged it up in plaster. They took it out. They X-rayed it when these special sites that can do 20 micron kind of layers of this stuff.
Yep.
It's a chest X-ray times 14,000. Okay. And they can do almost like a CAT scan of the thing. And they found the skeleton inside with a tool in its hand. That's a burial rite. We didn't see that until the 50,000 years ago.
Okay. Yeah, we've been around a while.
Right. And these guys were hominid, but they were clearly not human.
Okay. Correct.
So okay. Other non-human intelligence don't necessarily have to be from outer space.
Correct.
Okay. And there's other things, you know, as we know, there's interdimensional, all that stuff.
Okay. All right. Well,
I'm glad they're using that term because I never liked alien to begin with. And in my column, halfway through, I started using the term off-worlder, much to the chagrin of my editors. But I had to get away from that alien term.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, until they disclose what they actually know about what, at least from the UFO perspective, what this stuff is, I think that's probably a good term to use right now, because what if they are something that's interdimensional and they come and go from our dimension back to theirs? And I honestly don't know. All I know is that Michelle and I saw that huge triangle in 2018, and there was no way it should have been flying. There was no way it could just rotate, float in the air, and be the size of a football field and then appear in the middle of the state. And then appear on the west side of the state all that same night after we had seen it. We had people writing to us about it. You know,
I saw mine in June of 2012.
Okay.
I worked at a newspaper called a Post Standard at the time. I was in the technical department. Our shop made the plates every night. Okay. Yep. Big laser printer, cookie sheet kind of thing, you know, that type of thing. Yep. All right. We run the morning edition. We're all out of there by about 3. I'm home by about 3:20 in the morning. I close the garage door. I used to, if it was a clear night in Syracuse, I could stand there in the driveway looking north. I could see the Big Dipper, North Star, all that, right? And I used to sit there and do one. I used to live in a Buddhist monastery, so I'm used to doing like a standing meditation. I just clear the crap out of myself for the night. All of a sudden, I hear this humming, buzzing sound, boom, 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 like this. And I said, what the heck? And I looked up above me, and the stars were blotting out in a V form. And it got past me, and it had to be 2.5-3 stories thick, had to be over a football field long, slightly over a football field long. And it seemed to be moving at a leisurely 40 miles an hour off into the northwest, that type of thing. Had the classic look Dave Marler would talk about, the little red light on the bottom, the big three white things in the back, that type of thing. And I was just shock and awe, as they say. I was too chicken crap to go in and report it to MUFON. This is before my writing days.
Right.
8 months later, I'm writing a newspaper column. It had that much of an impact on me.
That's the same thing with us. I mean, we started this about a year after we had our sighting, and we started a Facebook group about 3-4 days after our sighting to see if anybody else saw anything. And we just had people inundating us with stuff constantly, and about that night and about other things that they had. And after a year of this, I was like, we should talk about this and bring people together and give people an outlet to tell their story and things. And it's been,
my hat's off to you. You guys got grassroots disclosure right here. This is where it all happens. It really is.
Yeah. Yep. And that's one of the reasons why I'm thinking we're seeing this stuff that the government wants to kind of take over that narrative, because we're all getting too close. It's like now they want to step in and control everything, but there's factions. You can see the factions inside the government that are fighting with each other. Kirkpatrick saying, no, there's no aliens, this, that, and the other. And then you've got Grush coming out and just blowing the lid off of this stuff about the people he's interviewed. And we have craft. We are backward engineering, non-human biologics. I mean, holy smoke. What do you make of all of this?
First recorded human biologic was in Smallville, Kansas, the 1930s. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just being fun with you. No, it's all important. And you know what's bothering me? I've heard a couple of these congressmen and senators stand up, and I got quotes on a couple of them. In fact, I've got notes for an article I'm going to write. Okay. If I get this gig. Okay. Talking about, oh, we have to understand this technology. We have to learn how to exploit it. Wait a minute. If you end up telling us that we've got non-human intelligences from other worlds visiting us, stop telling me about how great the technology is going to be and what kind of a boom it's going to be to our economy or our defense military complex or something like that. Let's start talking about academia. Every other field of human study is going to be radically changed when we find out that we're not alone in the universe, for one, and two, oh, by the way, they've been visiting us since biblical times. Okay. And the reason Eve didn't eat the apple with Adam, they got thrown out of the garden because of beer. This is honestly, Smithsonian backs me up on this. Okay, they found beer pits. And when the hunter-gatherers, like in Göbekli Tepe, when the hunter-gatherers came in, all the clans gathered, they feasted on the big beasts and everything that they got, and the women had made beer out of wild grains. And the party went on until either the meat ran out, or usually it was the beer that ran out. So they had to learn how to start cultivating wild grains, and that required people to stop hunting and start farming. So what threw us out of the Garden of Eden, going out there and being hunter-gatherers, was the need to do agriculture to make more beer. Okay. And the the alien people who were here visiting us at the time, who taught us laws, who taught them how to make beer and how to agriculture, if you can find their names in the name of any pantheon of Mesopotamia, Egypt, all those, that whole area over there, look up the ancient god for beer, and that's the name of whoever it was that was teaching them. This is the mystical person talking to you, but nobody listens to us. You know, we're just kooks, nuts, and crackpots.
I wouldn't be so sure of that. I think there's plenty of people that are listening. You just don't know they're listening. Yeah. Well, here's a question. I don't know if you can answer it or not, but Hides in Long Grass says, the MUFON rep was there early enough to get into the hearing, but he was kept out of the hearing. Why? Have you heard anything about that?
No.
Okay.
Me and MUFON are in best terms right now, so I could care less. Oh. I would rather have George Knapp talk or Jeremy Corbell talk. But if you notice, they stayed focused on those three principal former military officers.
Yep.
And every one of them was beyond reproach. Okay, the best and brightest.
Yes.
So I was very content to see those guys. There'll be plenty of time for the rest of us to testify down the road. Because just because they announced we're dealing with spacefaring races, and oh, by the way, we got a couple of them, and oh, by the way, in a box, and oh, by the way, we got some of their equipment, that is not going to stop the questions. There's going to have to be a lot of storytelling thereafter, because a lot of us have been carrying torch for 70 or 80 years. And it's time for the truth to come out. And those of us who've been, you know, we've all been blown off as kooks, nuts, and crackpots. Okay. Couldn't get an editor for the last 4 years to hire me to write a column. And I gave them plenty of good information. I said, this is what's going on. Don't you want to sell newspapers? Isn't that what we're in this business to do? No, right. No. Now, suddenly we got these congressional hearings. Suddenly somebody says, Cheryl, can we talk?
Yep. And I know you're having a lot of knocks on your door and your phone ringing off the hook as of recently. So
It's been crazy. They're asking all the stupid questions. They really are.
Yeah.
You wouldn't believe the stupidity of the questions. It usually gravitates within two questions, if not the first. It gravitates, what about aliens? You know, I wish they'd get off that first grade question.
Yeah.
There's much more to this than whether or not who's flying the thing. I wrote a paper I was finishing my bachelor's 100%. Degree in 2014, 2015 timeframe. 40-year-old bachelor's degree. And one of my term papers that I wrote towards the end, I made an argument about the fact that, how do I want to say this? Back in the day, let's say back in 47, Roswell, besides the Cold War issues of keep covering it up after it already been released to the world. Hell, I got to touch the teletype down at the Roswell Daily Record down there during the Roswell presentations a couple weeks ago. Okay. The teletype that they sent that out on the wires on. The deal is that back then they were afraid, well, the Orson Welles scared the hell out of the country 8 months ago or 8 years ago. Maybe we're going to have a problem with that too. You know? So there was that. And there was the whole idea of the Cold War, keeping secrets from the Ruskies. Okay. Okay. So I made the case to the academic board who was reviewing this paper. And I said, look, these days we don't have to worry about that. We've had 70 years to acclimate people with things like Star Trek and all of this kind of stuff, all these other things. These days, you can walk into any store and buy greeting cards with little gray aliens on them. And some of our most revered fictional characters, Mr. Spock, Chewbacca, you name them, they're all aliens. Superman, for God's sakes, you know? So this is, we've come a long way since 1938 or 39 and 1947. Most people, there's only a tiny percentage of people who are knee-jerk saying, there's no such thing. They're going to come around.
Yeah.
That or they're going to blow their brains out, one or the other. It's their choice.
Well, you know, you bring that up and I'm kind of worried about Grush. I mean, with the things that he was putting out there under oath in front of a subcommittee like that,
yes,
he is a very brave person. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, I'm concerned for his safety. And I know Lou Elizondo has talked about that in the past.
Remember what Lou said? Mm-hmm. The only thing that will shut me up is a bullet in the head. Okay? But, you know, I'd rather have some of these real serious warriors, the kind of people I had sat shoulder to shoulder with,
mm-hmm.
and say, we're going to be brave. And hey, I'm a combat veteran. I had people shooting at me. Okay. I can tell you after a while, you're not scared of very much. In fact, we used to have a joke when I worked at Lockheed. Somebody said, oh God, we're all going to get chewed out real bad. Cheryl, why aren't you upset? And I says, I'm a combat veteran. I've been the test step on a nuclear submarine. I've been through a sex change. What else you got?
Yeah.
I'm not scared.
Yeah. Yep. There's nothing that's going to top that, guys.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, as they
say. That's right.
It makes you braver too. So, but the bottom line is, yeah, there's things that scare me. I'm a former firefighter, volunteer firefighter. And there's some scary things there. But the bottom line is most things don't scare me that most people get upset about. And I think Mr. Grush did an extremely brave thing, but he did it the right way. He went and talked to the IG that had cognizance over all those programs and brought up a point. And the IG gave him boundaries that he could talk within. And he corrected twice there some of the questions with the congressman. When I was listening, he said, oh, I can't talk about that. It's talked about in the IG, but we'll have to go into in the SCIF to talk about it, or in the classified area to talk about it.
Yeah.
So he was playing it by the rules right down the road. And I was very, very proud of him for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much going on anymore. It's hard to keep track of everything. And, even Janice says here, and we'll start to wrap this up, says, I think Grush might be more protected by the fact that he was on national TV. Like Dr. Greer, too much in the news, too many people would now question. Absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay, I can go there with you on that.
Okay.
Back in 85, 86 timeframe, okay, 85, they wanted to take my security. I was in the middle of transition, okay, that nice guy with the white shirt and tie at IBM's hair was getting permed. Eyebrows were getting thinner, pierced earrings, a little bit of mascara, and people were getting twitched about that. And they were going to take my security clearance away from me. They said, this was the government guy said, oh, well, we think you can be blackmailed. I said, okay, can you come back in 2 weeks? You know, he said, well, we're going to shut it off. I said, shut it off in 2 weeks. He said, okay, I'll come back in 2 weeks and I'll shut it up. But, you know, we think you can be blackmailed. I said, I think I can fix that. And he said, no, you can't fix that. And I said, yes, I can. I came back 2 weeks later, threw a VHS tape on the desk. Is that on the blonde and Phil Donahue? I'm the redhead and Gary Collins.
Yep.
And then they said, oh, gee, you can't be blackmailed anymore. And he sent me a letter a week later. He says, well, we thought that was bad judgment. So we're going to send you to a Department of Defense certified psychiatrist to find out if you're in your right mind. I get down here and talk to this guy. He's a doctor out in commercial practice. And he talked to me for 20 minutes, sits back in his chair. Remember, this is 1985. He sits back, lights up a cigarette, takes a drag, looks at me and says, Cheryl, you're saner than the people who sent you here. He says, I got to do a full set of psychologicals. I said, nice. I just had a set done by my corporation up at Hopkins. He said, we'll send you out for another set on their dime. So they did. And it confirmed what the first set of psychological said is perfectly healthy woman, 140 IQ, took this test. Okay. And that shut everybody up. And I got my clearance.
There you go. In fact,
they even increased the level of it. So being publicly visible like this protects you. Mm-hmm. In fact, the more visible you can be, the more protected you are.
Yeah.
It's when you're in a closet that you can't protect yourself.
Yep. Yep. You're right. I totally agree with that.
I'm sorry so, I talk too much. I don't mean to.
No, that's fine. You are the guest. You are here to talk. So that's that's the whole point. But all right. Well, listen, it's been about an hour and 31 minutes, and this has been awesome. We are
time
glad
to say
you were,
das vidanya.
Yeah, das vidanya, comrade.
No, it's not comrade. If you're saying it in Russian, you got to say, das vidanya, tovorosh.
Tovorosh.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said I talk Russian, sir.
Uh-oh. Nope. We don't know. No Russian here. No Russian.
Yet.
Yet. Right. But yeah, so it's been great. We're happy you were able to come back on the show and talk to us about all the
anytime, latest. Guys. Anytime.
Yeah, it's been great. So
thanks to all the cool guys over here in the thread there. I've been watching all the comments going up. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we've very had honored. Some people join us, and it seems like the notifications went out late about our show going live. So yeah, we had Diane Boss show up. We had Hides in Long Grass. Who else? Straw Dog One showed up.
Jeanette was here,
probably still here. So yeah, thank you everybody.
And Dorothy Hawkins. Thank you, Dorothy.
She said she is sending you a letter for every book she owns so she can get one of your signature plates for everyone.
Okay, I'm looking at the stack. I won't have to get some more printed. Okay.
Might want to order more.
Yeah.
Actually, I got a box of them up in the closet. So.
Yep. So,
folks, it's been a wonderful. Yep. Invite me back anytime. And hey, consider having me back talk about mysticism sometime in the woo the consciousness stuff with UFOs.
Yes. Yes. There's got to be some type of intersection there that's happening as well. So we'll get into that, maybe like CE5 and things like that. So,
I wrote articles about that with my old column. So yeah, absolutely. I walked with one foot on Main Street, one foot in the Twilight Zone. So sure. Why not? Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. All right. Well, Cheryl, thank you very much for joining us again. And, we'll be in touch to get you back here.
Okay. This vidanya.
All right. Have a great night, hon.
All right. Well, everybody. Wow. I knew it. I knew it was going to be a great show.
I'm going on Amazon. I want the Michigan book.
I want the Michigan book and I want the Charmaine book.
I got to look up Emmett County.
Yep. All right, everybody. Look, it's been great. I know some of you jumped on late, so go back and watch this once we're done here. Start it from the beginning. I will be putting out the audio version here shortly. Takes about 2 hours or so for it to get done and everything. So, Michelle, what a great interview. Awesome night tonight.
It was a damn fine show.
Damn fine show. Let's see. What does Diane say? I already know this was a great show, even if I didn't see it all. Thank you, Diane. Thank you. So, everybody, once again, thanks for hanging out. And Michelle, do we got anything else coming up? What do we got going
on? Well, we will see everybody live next Saturday.
Oh.
And then we're going to take one more break.
Yeah.
In the month of August. We've got one more excursion under our belt to take.
Yeah, I think we're going. Diane's neck of the woods, aren't we?
Well, we're going to be in Tahoe. Maybe we'll go look for one of those giants.
Oh, the giants. The redheaded giants that live in those mountains out there. Yep. All right, everybody.
Have a great night, everyone.
Have a great night. And remember, for sure now, you want to make sure you're doing this. What is it, Michelle? Why don't you
keep your eyes to the sky? For me, it's to the left, to the right.
Yeah.
Looking all over the place.
Yeah. Just, man. Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you later.
Good night.
Have a good night.
You have been listening to the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast. You can reach us at mi.ufo.podcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at mi_UFO and join our Facebook group by searching for Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters. So until next time.